Lucis Trust, a non-profit, non-political, and non-sectarian organization on the roster of the Economic and Social Council of the United Nations and concerned with the establishment of world cooperation and goodwill, presents Inner Sight with your host, Robert Anderson. He, with Sarah and Dale McKechnie, President and Vice President of Lucis Trust, will discuss philosophical and spiritual topics essential to everyday life. Now here's your host, Robert Anderson.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Inner Sight. And our topic for today is the animal kingdom. And we also have a gift for you today, and I hope you stay with it because I'd like to tell you more about that gift. And I'd like to begin with this thought. This thought is from Alice Bailey. Alice Bailey is the founder of Lucis Trust, and everything that is spoken about in this show is based on the works of Alice Bailey. So when you listen to our dialogue, realize that all of our conversations emanate from one of her 24 volumes of books. And the quote that we're mentioning today that comes from the works of Alice Bailey is the following. In the coming age, the relation between the human and animal kingdoms will become increasingly close. The service of the animal to man is well recognized and of ceaseless expression. The service of man to the animals is not yet understood, though some steps in the right direction are being taken. It gives me pause for thought to wonder how mankind can be of service to the animals, but I certainly feel good about that thought because throughout man's history, animals have been of great service to man, and you know sometimes we really haven't treated them with the dignity that we should have treated them with. Can we see an increasing closeness between humans and animals?
Yes, we can. I'm still pondering on your little pun, giving you pause for thought. Yes, human beings are gaining a sense of service to the animal kingdom, I think, through the wonderful research that's been conducted in the last few decades. People like Jane Goodall, who has spent, I think, 3 or 4 decades in Africa studying chimpanzees, and Diane Fossey, who studied the gorillas, and another woman, scientist in Borneo, who's been studying the orangutans. Those are three people, interestingly, three women, who have given years and years of their lives to focusing in on one particular species and really gaining an in-depth understanding of what motivates those animals. So I think that's one example of service to animals. Another is the scientist, another woman, I think her name is Francine Patterson in Stanford University in California, who has done a lot of experimentation with teaching a gorilla named Coco to use sign language. And the communication they've developed has led to amazing insights into the mind of a gorilla. They've found by communicating with this gorilla that her favorite color is red and that she loves to ride in the car with the window down and she loves to go to McDonald's for a hamburger and she wanted a kitty. She signed at one point that she wanted a kitty. So they got her a kitten, which she named herself All Ball. And that's pretty amazing when you think about it. There's another experiment in, I think it's in Georgia, that's working with chimpanzees to learn computer language.
Is that right?
Yeah. Yes, they use a keyboard affair that they punch these keys that have symbols on them, and each symbol means something that the chimps understand, and they can ask for food or water or their toy or whatever, and they can communicate
that's
with
amazing.
Their directors.
It really is amazing.
They can make their thoughts and their desires known, and they can express them through this keyboard. And there is also, of course, the talk about the service that animals do or perform to humans. Is because you see that in the seeing eye dogs, and those have just started, early in this century, that whole great service was founded. And that's a tremendous service for the blind. And then there are, lately, there has been a lot about dogs that are used to in hospices and in hospitals and in nursing homes. They come in and they just, they're there and they're their happy self, and the patients really respond to these dogs, and cats too, I guess. But they're so outgoing, the dogs, the animals, and they seem to sense that they're somehow helping these human beings, and they're bringing out a real loving quality. And even with autistic children, I've heard that animals can draw these children out in ways that other techniques have not been successful in doing. So,
coming back to the idea of service of man to the animals, there's another aspect to consider, and that is the mind of the human being apparently is a means of impression or of impact upon the consciousness of the animal, and that this is a form of service that human beings can render to the animal kingdom, I suppose particularly to companion animals, domestic animals. But apparently, according to the writings of Alice Bailey, the ability of human beings to teach animals through discipline, through the impact of the will, is a quickening or a stimulation upon the evolution of animals. And it makes me think of that British woman who had a very popular TV program some years ago. I think her name was Barbara Wodehouse. Maybe some of our listeners will remember her. It was on PBS, and she was like a drill sergeant with these dogs. No nonsense was tolerated. She was all discipline and no soft edges about her, and they adored her. She would take them on what she called walkies, and these animals would come to her, the most goofy, uncontrollable, undisciplined, run-amuck animals, and she would have them turning into disciplined little lap dogs in a matter of, I don't know, days or weeks, because somehow the impact of her mind and her consistent discipline on them was just what they needed. And they were happy. You could see that the animals adored her. So that's an example of the impression, I suppose, that the human being can make upon an animal.
Yeah, right. I think some of those, I recall that show, some of the owners had more problems than they did with the animals, as a matter of fact. They were pretty unruly people themselves, and they couldn't give in to the discipline. So
they didn't have the will to discipline their animals, but she did.
Yeah. So,
do animals suffer in the same way that people do?
I don't think we would know how to answer that, because we don't really know what goes on in the consciousness of an animal. There is an element of mystery because they are a different kingdom, but certainly we can say they suffer in their own way. They can experience fear and terror and loss. There was an example from my childhood that I still remember. My uncle had two dogs, a Doberman Pinscher and a Boston Terrier. And another uncle of mine ran over the Boston Terrier with his tractor. And the poor Doberman Pinscher lay on the grave of the Boston Terrier for a week and died. I suppose just out of sheer heartbreak to have lost his friend. So we know that, yes, animals do suffer, but they don't have the self-consciousness, the sense of self-identity, apparently, that a human being does. And so they don't have a sense of memory or of anticipation of the future that might manifest as dread that causes so much of human beings suffering. You know how our imaginations just can create the most awful future imaginations that never are really realized a great deal of the time. Apparently, guessing, animals don't have that.
The animals don't have the developed mind that is present in a man or in a human being. And animals do suffer physically, and they do suffer, as you mentioned, emotionally or sentiently, you might say. But that mental, that aspect is not as developed, and as you say, they don't experience that anticipation or the imagination or the remorse or they don't have that urge to reach out to divinity, which often brings a sense of loss and failure and that sort of thing. So they don't experience that kind of suffering, but certainly the physical suffering they do, yes.
I had a cat, Bijou Noir, that passed away a couple of years ago, and I still miss that cat, and she still lives deep within me, and I'd like to think that she has a soul. Do animals have souls?
Well, it's another question that we human beings don't really know the answer to. It's one that a lot of people have wondered about. I suppose they have the soul of an animal. One of the mistakes I think we human beings do make out of our love for animals is to anthropomorphize them. Sorry, I'm not very articulate today. We turn them into little people, and they're not. They have the dignity of being their animal selves. But according to the writings of Alice Bailey, animals don't have the individuated soul that a human being does because they don't have that sense of identity that is uniquely a human being's problem, that we think we are separated and precious and unique individuals, which we are, but we don't have such a sense of our group connection. Animals, on the other hand, are said to belong to a group soul. And somehow I find that very comforting, that the thought that when an animal dies, that fragment of the group soul is reclaimed on some mysterious level.
Yeah, I think that group soul, I'm not sure about this, but I think sometimes you see it demonstrated in, herds of animals that stampeding together. They're all moving in one body.
You're right, they act as one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they act as one, and you see it very strongly in schools of fish, certain schools of fish.
And they birds.
Right, yeah.
And so there is a sense of wholeness, of oneness among that they all share and experience. But, of course, it's just not this individualized sense.
Another example that I think suggests the soul is research into elephants now knows that they form clans or groups, family groups, and that when one of their group dies, the elephants go through a period of mourning.
Is that right?
Yes. There was a program by the National Geographic Society a few years ago called Reflections on Elephants that was a marvelous program, and it gave you a sense of the mystery of elephants, that we know so little about them. And they do mourn when one of their group dies. They stay and pine for the dead member for a while. That suggests the soul in the sense of attachment and relationship. The quality, I suppose, on the animal level of love.
Mm-hmm.
Concern for the other animal. Another example I remember from some years ago was the keeper, if that's what it's called, of an aquarium, who told about his many years of work with fish, and he told of a sturgeon, which was part of his aquarium, being very, very sick, near death. And one day he witnessed two other sturgeons swimming with this sick sturgeon, one on each side of it to keep it afloat and aerating its gills. And he wasn't, he didn't strike me as a sentimental man a dreamer or whatever. He was reporting something he witnessed, and one can only speculate, but it certainly seemed that they were acting on behalf of the sick.
Yeah, this is interesting because these are qualities we generally attribute to human beings, qualities of compassion, perhaps, and intelligence. And when we think of the porpoise, too, that's there's amazing research been done on the porpoise.
Right, porpoises and whales. I think there's been for eons of time a recognition within human beings that animals have some soul, but I think the first person that really taught it as a doctrine was the Emperor Ashoka of India, hundreds if not 1,000 years ago, And he was a powerful man who was able to make it a crime, I believe, to harm animals. And he was kind of a pathbreaker in that sense. He taught the compassion that human beings should express to animals. And we have now societies that are devoted to protecting animals and animal rights. I think there is this awareness that there is a soul.
And for those people who just tuned in, you're listening to Inner Sight, and our topic for today is the animal kingdom. And if you're interested in purchasing the book that this particular show is based on, once again, the all of our shows are based on the works of the writings of Alice Bailey, the founder of Lucis Trust. And if you want to go into greater depth on what we're speaking about today, the animal kingdom, you might want to purchase the book called Esoteric Psychology, Volume 1. And if you call and you order that book, there's a 10% discount. And that's only if you order from us, by the way. Give us a call at 1-866-695-8247. And I mentioned earlier in the show that Dale and Sarah are very generously offering you a gift. All you have to do is call us up, and you can have that gift. It's a booklet, and it's called The Science of Meditation. And I think after you read this, you'll agree with me that you'll learn more about how to concentrate, learning concentration techniques, and through meditation, how meditation could enhance your ability to concentrate. And you'll come away with an ability, perhaps, or more of an ability to use the mind in a much more focused way. And more importantly to all of us at Lucis Trust is, through the booklet, you might pick up on the idea of how meditation can be used to service humanity. So it's a meditation. The ability to meditate is an ability that lies within all of us. And I think that by looking at this booklet, you might actualize that particular ability. But to order our books, our cassette tapes of the radio shows, cassette tapes of some of our books, and also the a free booklet containing the Great Invocation, which is a prayer that we enjoy a lot. Or, by the way, if you'd like a schedule of our meditation meetings, if you'd like to join us, or for more information on our organization, a general package of information, you can give us a call at 1-866-695-8247. 1-866, an easy way to remember it, is 1-866-NY-LUCIS, L-U-C-I-S. That's 1-866-NY-LUCIS, L-U-C-I-S. Our website is www.lucistrust.org, and our email is newyork@lucistrust.org. And remember that the work of Lucis Trust, including this program, is funded entirely by voluntary donations, so we welcome your donations as a means of keeping us on the air. Abraham Lincoln said the following: "I care not much for a man's religion whose dog and cat are not the better for it." What do you think Lincoln meant by this?
Well, his syntax is a little mangled, but I think we get his drift, that you can't claim to be a religious person, you can't claim to love God and to be devout, if you then turn around and mistreat those who are in your care, in the sense of being the weaker or the lesser. And that applies to children and the disabled and the sick and elderly, and particularly to the lower kingdoms, like the animals, who don't have the same mentality that a human being has. This is, I think, the idea behind that very poignant book, To Kill a Mockingbird. If you remember, that was a story about a retarded man who was abused by his community, and the character played by Gregory Peck pointed out to his children that it's a sin to treat such a person in such a way, just as it's a sin to kill a mockingbird,
yeah,
because all it does is sing
that
and make life beautiful. And it's also the theme of that wonderful poem, The Rime of the Ancient Mariner by Coleridge. A mariner killed an albatross for no reason at all, just for the heck of it. And he suffered the torture of guilt and shame by having this albatross draped around his neck, and he had to examine his consciousness and realize that, it's a sin to kill a creature that has done no harm to you. Religion, I think, depends upon our ability to live our spiritual beliefs in an expression toward those around us and the world around us, and not claim just to love God and mistreat our own family and our pets and so on.
And what I like about the writings of Alice Bailey and about Lucius Trust is there's such a theme running through all 24 volumes. Not that I've read all of them, but every part of them that I've read so far, the theme seems to be a respect for the dignity of all life, not just human beings, which I really value a lot. I like the approach to that thought that Alice Bailey sets forth in her books.
Schweitzer touched on that too, Albert Schweitzer. His idea of reverence for all life was central to his teaching.
And also, I just want to say this too, that we have 24 volumes of books, and if you decide that you'd want to really explore the Lucius Trust books written by Alice Bailey, you can certainly do so. And if you order all 24 books, all 24 volumes, you do get a 10% discount. And another gift that I forgot to mention is the cassette tape that you can order from us, too. We'll be happy to give you that as a gift, Beginning to Meditate. Once again, you can call us at 1-866-695-8247, or an easy way to remember it, 1-866-NY-LUCIS. Think of New York Lucis, L-U-C-I-S. What role do they play in evolution?
The domestic animals are like, they're on the leading edge, you might say, of the animal kingdom in terms of intelligence. You could also say they are like the initiates of the animal kingdom, because they have been, especially those domestic animals that are working so close with human beings. And that's one of the... It brings up the idea that one of the purposes of the human relationship with the domestic animals, particularly like dogs and cats and horses and
elephants,
that we have a responsibility to these animals to bring them more towards the human kingdom. In other words, the domestic animals are like a bridging part of the kingdom of the species of the animal, from the lower animals to the human stage, and the domestic animals play that part as a bridging agency, you might say.
And it's interesting that bridging, according to the writings of Alice Bailey, will be accomplished not so much through love of the animal as through the impact of the mind. It's a mental bridging that will occur, and it depends upon discipline, the discipline of the animal. And all of those, some people might argue about the cat, but the horse, the dog, and the elephant respond to discipline. We can also see that communication with these animals is bridging the gap. Like we've learned that elephants have a form of communication amongst themselves that uses sonic waves that are below the threshold of human hearing. That's a new
piece of knowledge. That, yeah.
They discuss quite a few things in their elephant way that we don't hear about. It's fascinating to me what's going on in animal research today.
Yes, and as you pointed out, I think I'd like to just repeat it again, that this is a very human responsibility that we have to the animals to, in a sense, teach them to think, because we're trying to develop the mind principle in the animal kingdom, and particularly in the domestic animals, so they can eventually, way down the road, thousands of years from now, make that step evolutionary-wise into the human kingdom. And that's what we're told that will happen, but not right away, but we have a part to play. Us human beings have a part to play in that grand evolutionary step forward for the animal
kingdom. Profound purpose in the evolution of the animals.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. It's a tremendous responsibility, and that's where every pet owner can step in and realize that he has a responsibility to his pet, whether it's a cat or a dog, and so we have to keep that in mind.
Do you have any final thoughts on animals?
Well, I'd like to come back to the idea that there is a mystery in the different kingdoms that make up our planet. We can't fully understand these other kingdoms that contribute to our planet's evolution. God's plan includes far more than just the human strain. And I found this idea beautifully expressed some years ago when I came across a quotation by Henry Breston. It says, referring to animals, they are not brethren, they are not underlings, they are other nations, fellow prisoners of the splendor and travail of Earth. And to me that sums up beautifully that we cannot fully understand or find our way into the mind and soul of animals. There is a great deal that we are beginning to understand, but there are other aspects of their evolution that are beyond our comprehension. But what's important to come away from that thought is that we must do all that we can to foster and honor their part in the plan and not just use them for human purposes, which is too often what humanity has done, not only with animals, but with the vegetable and mineral kingdoms too. They have their part in the plan, and we must try to understand it and serve it.
And I would think that a lot of people out there might want to know more about who we are, and one of the things that I think is appropriate to say is that we're not a religion. People seem to think that we are, but we're not, and you can certainly hold on to your religion. We're an organization that looks at life in a certain way. We look at the deep questions about life. And probably the best way to know about us is to order that general package of information that tells you about our meetings. And you can certainly hold on to your religion. And what we do is explore a life. We look at life in a certain way. And I think you can pick up the essence of the ideas that we're into by listening to this broadcast. And once again, if you want to order our books, any of our books, we have 24 volumes of books, all emanating from Alice Bailey. All of her works are here for you, Esoteric Psychology, Ponder on This, and a multiple number of other books. But give us a call at 1-866-695-8247 or 1-866-NY-LUCIS. And in closing, we invite you to ponder on this thought. Goodwill is the touchstone that will transform the world. Goodwill is love in action. It's the energy that draws us together in right relationship. There is a world prayer called the Great Invocation. It's a call for light and love and goodwill to flow into the world and into our hearts. Let's listen for a moment to these powerful words.
From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into human minds. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into human hearts. May the coming one return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide all little human wills, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the human race, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth.